Welcome to another episode of Message from Mom, where we're busting the myth that mothers-in-law aren't necessarily monsters-in-law. And I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts who happen to be my daughters-in-law. So to the left of me is Kelly.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I'm married to Beth's oldest son, Alex.
And to the right of me is Chelsea.
Hi, I'm Chelsea. I'm married to Beth's middle son, Andrew.
And we got that right on the first take. So
yeah, we did.
No tongue-tied here.
Yay. Yay for us. So before we get started on this week's episode, we're going to raise a toast because we do this every episode because we know that you don't necessarily need to be a blood relative to love your relative. So cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
To another episode.
Cheers. Oh, boy.
And this is really kind of a hot topic that we're tackling today. Some of our episodes are very light and bright and fun and personal experiences. And perhaps we're going to bring our personal experiences into today's episode. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a very fascinating topic. And it is really the over-medication of America. Because here is a startling statistic, and I will just read this, that the United States takes the most prescription drugs, with a national average of each person spending around $1,200 a year. So that really stuck
wild.
With me. Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
It's crazy that the United States is the most medicated country in the world. And so I just thought we would just take a little bit of a deep dive into that. And also, since I am 65, so I was very curious. So here's another statistic. I was very curious as to what the average prescription that a 65-year-old takes. And it says older adults are also more likely than younger counterparts to be taking multiple prescription medications.
Mm-hmm.
And it said more than half of adults 65 and older, so that's 54%, report taking four or more prescription drugs, which is crazy. And so they call that polypharmacy when you have more than one prescription drug in play.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought that was interesting. So anyway, so I'm just going to throw those statistics out and we can just kick it off because it really has also come to my attention that 30 years ago, we were not taking nearly as many prescription drugs as we are today. So, and also, I do know that Big Pharma is a machine.
Yeah.
And they are making billions of dollars,
money.
A ton of money. And I don't have the statistics on this, but I do know that our prescription drugs are way more expensive here in the U.S. than they are in other countries. And that's also a fact, although I don't have that backed up right now, but I do know that that is a fact.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's kind of interesting, too, because I feel like, you know, when you ask someone just casually, like, oh, what's your job? What do you do? And, you know, anytime someone says, oh, I'm in pharmaceutical sales or I'm in medical sales, it's like in the back of your head, you immediately know, oh, they probably make a lot of money.
They do.
Which is...
They do. They make bank.
Kind of...
They do. There was a really cute...
Sad.
There was a really sweet movie years ago, Love, Drugs, and Other Things. It was Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So she actually had Parkinson's at a very young age, but he was a pharmaceutical sales rep.
Yeah.
And he was kind of a sleazebag.
Okay.
That kind of changed his life, but not that he was a sleazebag because he was in pharmaceutical sales, but he was a pharmaceutical sales rep.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's been a ton of shows. I mean, I think, I don't know if it's called Overdose or there was one that just came out and it was on, you know, OxyContin and all of that. And I mean, I feel like it's just been a big, you know, point of topic right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Well, the opioid crisis, I mean, has just been obviously a huge problem for what are we going on almost two decades now? So it's that kind of over prescribing, I think, is one thing. But then I think like what we're kind of, maybe we'll leave the opioid crisis aside because that is a whole other,
thing.
But if we're talking about like, Beth, your statistic and your research on the not only the amount of money that Americans are spending on prescription drugs, but what are those drugs actually for, right? And so according to the NIH, the National Institute of Health, the most common prescriptions are for things like high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and diabetes. Mm-hmm. These are American problems mm-hmm. that we have here in way higher numbers than other countries around the world.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe we can talk a little bit about that and like how these drugs that are being prescribed that people are spending yes. hard-earned money on are for things that could be fixed with other avenues, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. not being dependent and paying money for mm-hmm. prescription drugs, but maybe changing diet and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you're a big proponent of diet being a cure for not only those three issues, but also, you know, mood and, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, certain, or like we were talking about eczema and different
autoimmune diseases,
yes. right? That can be fixed with diet.
Yes, which is, yes, if the anti-inflammatory or the, there are so many natural remedies to mm-hmm. an anti-inflammatory disease, such as eczema or psoriasis, or, I mean, we can fill in the blank. But I will just say, so, and we did just briefly talk about this. Listen, there are so many diseases that you do need medication for. We are not here to say yay or nay on anything, because this is where you do need a medical doctor in your life. But I also encourage everyone to take a deep dive on your own, because our medical community, they were not trained to get to the root of a problem. They were trained to treat a problem. And many times that is just prescribe mm-hmm. a medication. And so I'll just share, I'll try to share briefly, but 6 years ago, I really just started a health journey on my own. I mean, I never really had a weight problem. I mean, I was always like pretty much in optimal health my whole life. I mean, I worked out. I mean, I did like all the things. Although I have to say that my diet was a very typical American diet. And we've had conversations many times. I mean, I go back and I am just horrified with what I fed my children when they were growing up. Pop-Tarts. We always had Pop-Tarts and Eggos. We had a lot
typical
of processed
90s child typical, diet.
Oh my gosh. I mean, if I could change anything, it would be that. And then, and also because Andrew had terrible allergies growing up, and a lot of it could have been, and I was kind of onto something. I mean, that's when I was really searching and seeking a lot of things, but there wasn't a lot of information during the 90s and even the early aughts. It's really only been in the past like 10, 15 years, because we've made so many discoveries, like our microbiome,
right,
which is a whole community that lives inside us that we didn't even know existed until like 15 years ago.
Yeah, they did not talk about that.
No,
which is wild,
right?
I mean, I grew up my whole life with gut issues.
Yes.
And yes. not one person ever told me have you tried taking a probiotic?
Yeah. No. Well, because we didn't know. We didn't know.
That, I know, but not even one doctor, which is just kind of crazy. It's like, oh, well, you know.
But there again, I mean, to their defense, and I'm not here to defend them, but they did not have that knowledge.
Yeah.
When like a doctor that's 65, he did not go to medical school learning any of those things. And mm-hmm. And also, they're not holistic doctors. They're not, I mean, now there's different terms. There's like functional medicine, which mm-hmm. really gets to, you know, to the bottom, to the root problem of your disease. So anyway, but I'll just back up. So we're not here to say yay or nay, because listen, I've had my knee replaced. I mean, I've been in the hospital. I want all the drugs when I need them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also the one that wants to get off as quickly as possible, because I do know like even anesthesia will completely wreck your microbiome.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's just like dropping an atomic bomb. So you once you understand how your body is working, how beautifully it's made, and then the things that we can do to support it, mm-hmm. which is diet. I'm a big proponent of that. And it really has been in the past 6 years, because when my late husband was diagnosed with cancer, and it was just a very stressful time in my life. And stress opens up actually a big doorway to disease.
Mm-hmm.
And they really thought they were going to have to put me on these really heavy drugs for rheumatoid arthritis. And that's the only thing that they could figure out, because my body was just inflamed with, I mean, it was just like off the charts because we went to a rheumatologist and I mean, I was having problems with the first symptom was I'll never forget because we were going off to a campaign in Florida and I just got out of the shower and one of my ankles had like doubled in size since I stepped into the shower. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I was like, did I hit it in the middle of the night? Is this, you know, did I not remember this? I mean, I was like kind of running through the scenario. So anyway, but it was just that one incident. So then I went to the orthopedist and then they did a lot of x-rays. They couldn't come up with anything. So then we went to a rheumatologist and they did some tests on me and my charts were just, or my blood work was off the charts with inflammation. So, and that was at a time it was just like, and I can just remember just praying. I'm like, oh dear Lord, you know, I have to be taking care of Mac. I mean, I can't be sick. Mm-hmm. I have to be taking care of Mac. I can't be the one that needs to be taken care of. So that was really the beginning of my journey was that incident. And it just really opened my eyes. I mean, the more I learned, the more I read, the more, you know, I mean, now there are many podcasts that you can tune into. There's much more information than even 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was clear to me that it was my diet and that I needed to change and I needed to change things very, very quickly. And also too, I mean, I'll give a plug and I talk about faster rate of fat loss on numerous occasions, but that was actually a program that really also opened up my eyes because it was like, oh, they're talking about balancing your macros. So you need this much protein every day. You need this much, you know, carbs every day. You need the, you know, this much, fats every day. So, and balancing that. So anyway, so through all of it, I mean, I can tell you, I went back to the rheumatologist like 6 months after I started taking a deep dive into my diet and everything had cleared up.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So all those big pharmaceutical prescriptions that they wanted to prescribe that would have been, you know, hundreds of dollars every month.
Right.
I didn't need, and that was just because I changed my diet. So
and also you're just not reliant on
I drugs. Do know that your diet is everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think too, speaking to diet, but also you kind of talked about this a little bit and cause I have an autoimmune condition mm-hmm. that I still have. And I see a holistic doctor about, but, it is definitely diet mm-hmm. because I definitely notice that it bothers me more mm-hmm. when I drink, you know, a lot of alcohol or I mm-hmm. eat poorly. Mm-hmm. However, what I'm kind of finding now that we've kind of gotten to the point where, you know, we've taken a look at, okay, what bacterial, fungal, virus, myotoxin, like all of these things, like, okay, that's cleared from me, right? Because mm-hmm. it could be a multitude of things that you've picked up over your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Diet plays a role, mm-hmm. but now we're kind of leaning a little bit more into what traumatic event has happened in your lifetime mm-hmm. that has caused some sort of stress mm-hmm. and stress mm-hmm. can cause inflammation, which you had Huge. Mentioned yes. at the time that you were going through this. Mac was obviously mm-hmm. diagnosed with cancer and you mm-hmm. were kind of like trying to navigate that. And that's what I'm finding now with mine is that, it's actually a combination of diet and past events that have happened to me that have, and there's something, so there's a book and I don't know who we can look it up, but who wrote it, but it's called Body Keeps the Score.
Oh my gosh. What a great book.
And I've never read it before, but essentially great. My holistic doctor does something called NET and it's mm-hmm. called net emotional response testing. And basically it's this idea that your body, your organs hold emotions. Mm-hmm. So your liver holds certain emotions, your stomach, your heart, all of these like key organs in your body. Well, if you have these emotions that you never release mm-hmm. from those organs, it can eventually cause disease, mm-hmm. which can lead to cancer, autoimmune mm-hmm. conditions, all of these things mm-hmm. that even if you fix your diet, if you don't actually fix the traumatic or the emotional distress that you've caused to your heart, mm-hmm. then you still harbor that You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which doesn't ultimately cure itself. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. It's kind of one of those things that sounds like a hoo-ha, like sort of like,
woo-woo. I know.
But he's done it to me before, and it's kind of wild because I walk out of there and I'm like, wow, like I didn't know that that kind of bothered me.
Yeah.
And then he'll tell you, he'll go, okay, well, the rest of the day, you're probably going to feel kind of heavy, you know, like there's like this like weight that like, and he's right. You kind of drive home and you feel this like heaviness, like in your heart, but you like in your chest and you don't know why.
Yeah.
And then the next day you wake up and you're kind of like, oh, there's this level of release.
Yeah.
But
that reminds me of Rolfing, which is a deep tissue massage series. Yes. And I remember when I did that, there were certain parts of my body that were just holding on to so much stress or trauma or whatever, that when he really got in there and dug into those aspects, or, you know, aspects into those muscles, it brought up a lot of emotions and kind of, you know, was a really tremendous release, even though I hadn't realized I needed to release anything. So yeah, I can see how, you know, the body, body keeps the score.
It does. And our bodies can become misaligned. So it can be structurally misaligned, which then puts a lot of pressure on different areas.
Compensating for
the whole, that old, was it like a nursery rhyme? You know, the leg bones connected to the thigh bone. But it's really, really true because, I mean, it's all connected and it's all, you know, put together, as I said, beautifully. I mean, these bodies of ours are amazing, both inside and outside. And one thing can go wrong. And just like with Rolfing, because I just remember I did Rolfing after I had my knee replacement, because about a year or so after the surgery, we could still tell in Pilates, my Pilates instructor, Allie, was always, you know, coaching me and sharing different things, but we could still see that my gait was off. There was just, you know, it just had not come back to where it needed to be.
Yeah.
And so I went to Rolfing, and sure enough, I mean, there was like one session and I was like, it was like so painful, but so uplifting at the same time, because we finally got, you know, we got my body back in line the way that it needed to be. But it was like a hallelujah moment when that happened. So,
well, that's what those sessions can like feel like, even like the NET sessions that he does. Because he's done a few with me where he'll release like quite a few emotions at once. And then he'll kind of test me and he'll be like, okay, let's just like test to like verify that if we can even do anymore. And there's been times where he's testing. He's like, your body is like
done.
Your body's essentially done. Like you're in, it's going haywire right now. And I can feel it because the last time I did it with him, then he went to adjust me. He does like chiropractic work and applied kinesiology and all of that. And he went to adjust me and I looked at him and I said, I was like shaking, like I was physically shaking. And he was like, are you all right? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, my whole body is shaking. But it was because we had released so many past
traumas
that had happened to me.
Right.
That specifically are relating to my current autoimmune issue that I have. So, but yeah, it's just so interesting.
Yeah.
So now let me, I'll switch gears just a little bit, because I'm just going back to the America being over-medicated and just the statistic that I shared, that 65-year-olds were taking 4 prescriptions or more a month, which is...
That's the average.
The average. Some are taking more and some are taking less. But I will just share, I take 0.0 prescription drugs. And, you know, knock on wood, and I'll knock on my head too. But that's because I have radically changed my diet, my outlook on life. Well, I can't say that my outlook on life has changed, but I mean, I did go through a trauma when I lost Mac, and that was a challenge to work through. But I was determined to work through that and come out on the other side. And so I do know that, having done that, my life, I guess, I mean, I'm looking forward and not behind. So I know that that's
a big thing.
That's a big thing. And it really is. And I know that people, I mean, if you have lost a loved one, grief is one of the most traumatic things that you're going to be faced with. But there is hope, and you can work through it. There's no magic. I mean, hello, I'm going to put in air quotes. There's no magic pill. I mean, there's not. I mean, you can medicate yourself. I mean, you can, if you're having trouble sleeping or whatnot. I just didn't want to do those things. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to do it in a natural way. But my diet has been so cleaned up. I'm a big proponent of exercise. We need to be moving these bodies of ours, because honestly, if you don't move it, you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I will just share with any 65-year-old or any 60-year-old, I mean, fill in the blank with your age, it is never too late. It's never too late to start moving, to start an exercise program, to clean up your diet. And then also, I'm a big proponent. I do have at least a dozen supplements in my medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so whether that's fish oil.
I'm like an 80-year-old woman in my supplement drawer. You want to, I have a whole closet.
Fish oil, I mean, vitamin D, B12, probiotics. I'm a very big proponent of supplements. Mm-hmm. And I do share this from time to time on my social media channels. And I do know a lot of people like poo-poo it and it's like totally fine. I'm not here to convince anybody. I mean, this is not a sponsored podcast. I don't have any, you know, skin
we're
in
it. We're not selling supplements.
But boy, I do.
It works for you.
It does. It works for me. Yeah. And I'm a big proponent of it. So, and I know, I mean, actually Andrew's completely changed his life in the past year or so.
We both I mean, his supplement drawer might be more than mine, to be honest.
So
it's like insane. But we both just take supplements. I mean, we don't do any kind of and this is coming from someone that, so I grew up like it, I wouldn't say that I was like heavily medicated as a child, like, but I did grow up medicated in a sense, because I had asthma as a kid. And looking back, and even my mom will agree with this, I actually don't think I had asthma. I think I was misdiagnosed with asthma. I think I had anxiety. And I don't think anyone ever recognized that. But it would be like anytime I got anxious, that's when I felt like I couldn't breathe. Right. And I didn't know how to calm myself down as a child. And so then, you know, my mom took me to the doctor and it's like, well, she's having trouble breathing. Oh, well, she has asthma.
Right.
Oh, well, we're going to put her on Singulair. And I was on Singulair probably since the age of 10 until I was 20, to the point where they were like, I don't even know if this is working anymore because you've been on it for so long. Then you go back and look up Singulair as a whole, and it had like a whole slew of statistics and research that was done on it later on, that it caused massive depression in people. It never did in me. Like I never felt that, but, there were higher suicide rates with people that were on Singulair. I never felt like that, but with a lot of people there were, I did albuterol inhalers a lot, a lot of breathing treatments when I went to hospitals because of my asthma. But I think it was just anxiety.
Yeah.
I think I had massive anxiety and I don't think I knew how to calm myself. And then once I finally got to like my like late 20s, I have not taken any kind of asthma medications in the past probably 8 years. Haven't done an inhaler, haven't had a breathing treatment.
So
it's changed since then.
So is that when you realized that you had anxiety and you started to take steps to...
I think so, yeah.
Deal with the anxiety.
Deal with that.
I think it changed with that. And then with my autoimmune condition, I kind of reached a point where I went to one, I had like one moment where I went to a doctor and she basically looked at me and she said, you're going to have to be on this really highly potent steroid cream for the rest of your life to fix this autoimmune condition. And I was like 26 or 27. And she said, and I looked at her, I go, how does that work if I want to have kids? And she looked back at me and this was my OBGYN. And she goes, oh, you're probably never going to have children.
Wow.
And as like a 27-year-old, I don't know if you can like imagine like me sitting there by myself in a room and this doctor saying, oh, that's probably not possible for you. And I walked out of the office. I literally took the prescription in my hand. I walked out of the office and I threw it in the trash can and I just walked out. I didn't get it. I never got it filled, never did any of that. And then about a month later, I got shingles and I went back to the doctor and I was having a lot of nerve pain from the shingles, maybe like 3 months after that. Same thing happened. I was in the room for 2 minutes. She said, here's a nerve blocking pill. Walked out. I was like, I'm not getting this filled. that's when I started seeing my holistic doctor. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of mind blowing.
Started to take a deep dive into why. Instead of like just fixing it. And that's what I said. I mean, our medical community, they are definitely trained just to fix the problem. So you're either going to have surgery, you're going to have a prescription. They're never interested into, like when I had to have my knee replaced. And that honestly, that was in direct conjunction with the stress that had entered into my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, and I was just bone on bone, like a year and a half after my first symptoms of, you know, rheumatoid arthritis and all of that. But they weren't interested at all in, you know, oh gosh, why are
like,
you?
What are you going through right now? What's happening in your life?
Yes, because just replacing. We had x-rays from 18 months ago and you're perfectly fine. That knee was perfectly fine because actually I do have a bad knee. I had an injury in college playing powder puff football and I had to have ALC fix. So that knee was the skeptical one, but my good knee, which was perfectly fine 18 months before I had surgery. I mean, that's pretty drastic, but nobody was like, oh, well, you know, why did this happen? But I knew because I was already on my journey. I was already understanding that I'm not necessarily going to find the answers, the root cause of things from my medical community, but I'm going to find it on my own. And there is, and that's one of the things I do love about like podcasts and the, you know, the 21st century, because there is quite a lot of information.
Yes, that is true.
And a lot of information had been suppressed for years from not only big pharma, but from our food sources.
Well, I think too, you've obviously been in the situation with the whole rheumatoid arthritis and the knee replacement. I've been in the situation. I don't know if you have, Kelly, but it gets to a point in time where, and I tell everyone about my holistic doctor. Mm-hmm. I am like his biggest cheerleader advocate. He has truly changed my life. And it's fine if, you know, even Andrew is like skeptical of him, and that's fine. But I tell Andrew, I'm like, this is like my form of therapy. And if I feel like it's working for me and it is, then it is. Mm-hmm. But I have so many people at Pure Bar come up to me and they're like, oh, this is wrong. This is wrong. And I say, oh, go to my holistic doctor. 5 months will go by and they won't listen to me. And then they'll finally come back and they'll go, what's the name of your holistic doctor? Mm-hmm. And I find that you reach a point in time where you go, I've had enough.
Yep. Yeah.
And I've had enough of these doctors telling me this, that I need this prescription. I'm done. Let me find alternate avenues. And that's what happened to me. And that's obviously what happened to you, where you were like, I've had enough.
That's right.
You know,
I know there's an answer out there and I will find it. I will be that dogmatic person to find it. But the cool thing is that there are more and more doctors coming out and understanding how the medical system is broken. Right. And there's more and more, you'll see them over on YouTube, or you'll see that they've written a book where they, you know, a cardiologist, a well-known cardiologist will come out and say, okay, yes, diet. So important.
Exercise.
Or like for years, like also, you know, when I was growing up, we were always told to eat less, exercise more. So eating less, I mean, it wasn't like, okay, eat less potato chips and more broccoli. No, it was just like, eat less. You just need, you know, so me, it's like, okay, well, I can have one chocolate chip cookie, you know, with those calories. I was still making the wrong choices and putting too much sugar. So now we can maybe segue over to sugar because in conjunction with diet, how much sugar the United States consumes
without even realizing it.
Startling.
Yeah.
So much of it is hidden.
You want a sugar and white bread.
Right. I know.
Yeah.
So you really have, again, you have to be your own self-advocate and educate yourself, but you really have to start reading those labels because sugar is the number one killer.
Yeah,
it is. And we just don't even realize that we're eating it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So until you really do start to clean up your diet and see where those hidden sugars are.
Yeah, the hidden sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My dad, a few years ago, was diagnosed like pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been retired now for, gosh, a very long time. It's been probably 15 years or something. And he doesn't have a super active lifestyle. And so I was really worried when he got this diagnosis, because I was like, oh no, you know, he's going to be on medication. Like, it's just going to be, you know, this slow march, you know, down the diabetic road. And his doctors, you know, said, you're pre-diabetic, so you've got time to turn things around for yourself, you know, it's like this reprieve, right? And he really took it to heart and completely changed his diet. I mean, and I never really thought my dad could do it, because I feel like my dad is of the generation of men who's kind of like, I'm, you know, stoic, and I'm, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, whatever.
You're not gonna tell me what
to do. They're kind of set in their ways, you know? Yeah. But my dad really impressed me, and really, I was so proud of him, because, and I can't remember how many months it was of diet change that it took for him. Mm-hmm. Probably they tested him again at 6 months and then 8 months and something.
It's a while. But it's not going to happen overnight.
No, of course not. But it is amazing how quickly it can start to reverse if you're committed to it and you stick with it and you do it. Because it didn't take all of that long before the diagnosis was reversed. He's totally fine. He still, you know, manages to like watch what he eats and takes care of all of that, but he doesn't have to be as like, he can allow himself to have a chocolate chip cookie or something like that.
Yeah,
but
he can.
Yes.
But it was amazing. Like the transformation was really amazing. And I was so proud of him for being, you know, a 70-year-old man to like, to actually do it. You know, I was really, really proud of him, but it just kind of goes to show too, that even the most stubborn people, with given the right information,
you can change,
and the right, you know, or and enough
direction,
but also like will to just not surrender to just being on a on a drug that's going to solve the problem for you, for because you know, I think a lot of people in that age range, 70s 80s, I think there's a fair number of them, and this is probably what we see when we see these prescription stats, but like that they're just kind of resigned, like, you know what, I'm 75, I'm 78, you know, I'm 80. Like, I don't really, it's too hard to change. I'm just going to go ahead and take this medication and da da da.
Well, and I think too, it's like they put a lot of trust in the doctor that's giving them the prescription. Yes. And I think, I mean, if I would go back in time when I was 26 or 27 at that one doctor that was prescribing that really highly potent steroid cream, and I would have trusted her with that, it's like, she probably was right. There probably at that point in time would not have been a possibility for me to have children, because you can't rub highly potent steroid creams on your body and expect a good outcome from that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I also didn't trust her. I was like, I trust that you're telling me that I have an autoimmune and that this is the autoimmune condition. Mm-hmm. I do trust that because you tested for that and the test result came back positive. But there are other options. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing, like you said, how your dad's body fully reversed itself. Our bodies are amazing. They are. I mean, think of women that have children, like, you know.
Oh, I know. What happens in 9 months with your body. And
it's like your body and like feeding, is able to do that. And
feeding and housing another human.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Yeah. Well, and also too, going back to just the prescriptions, and when I'm watching television, and there are quite a few commercials that are pharmaceutical related, but when you, because they always have to give the disclaimer,
and when they like a mile long,
I know, so
terrible,
it's like, and I'm like, death, and death,
right? That's a horrifying, and it's actually frightening when they go through all of the side effects.
It is, and it's something to really pay attention to and think about too. I actually, I knew a woman many years ago who had rheumatoid arthritis, and it was so bad. She had had it her whole life. And she was on this medication where the side effect was breast cancer. Mm-hmm. What happened? She got breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So now she had this rheumatoid arthritis and breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And she was only in, I think at the time she might have been in her like mid to late 30s. So, and she had a kid, like, I mean, and she was a single mom. Like it was really, really incredibly horrible. Like you're taking this medication and then you get this other horrible disease that no one ever wishes to get. And the litany of side effects.
Yes.
I remember when I was, a teenager, cause there was a period, I think I might've been like a freshman in high school, but I like had really bad acne that just like all of a sudden started. And my mom took me to the dermatologist, and luckily my mom was pretty, like she was kind of like you in the sense of, I still like obviously had Eggo waffles, but, and I still, you know, had medicine for the asthma that we thought I had, because we thought it was necessary, but she also was a little skeptical of certain things, which I'm glad she was, because the dermatologist right away was like, well, why don't we put her on Accutane? And then he went through the whole list of, you know,
side effects.
And here's the thing is I know people personally that have been on Accutane, and my acne was not nearly as bad as some of the people that I know that have had acne and have had to go on it. So if you've had to go on Accutane, like, I'm not saying one way is correct or the other. But my mom was like, what are the side effects of this? And obviously, so side effects, it's like, you have to be on like birth control. You have to get, even as like a freshman in high school, it's like, you have to be on birth control. You have to get blood tests done like every 3 months, I want to say. A side effect is death, like legitimately death, because basically it just dries you out from the inside out. And the reason you have to get blood tests done is because they basically have to check that you're not pregnant, because it causes serious birth defects if you were to get pregnant while being on this. So that's why even as like a freshman, I mean, I wasn't doing anything as a freshman in high school that would even remotely cause me to get pregnant. But even though I wasn't, they're like, no, you have to be on birth control because they're that, you know, strict about it.
That bad?
Because that's how bad the side effects are.
I would imagine like your kidneys and liver would go through the ringer with that kind of medication too.
Like your whole, basically it dries everything out from the inside. And then like, I think people that have been on it, they say their lips crack really bad. Everything I mean, I never went on it because my mom was like, no, we're not doing this. Like, please give us something else. Something a little bit more topical or mild, you know?
Well, and also too, you know, just going back to the average 65-year-old has four medications. So one medication side effects can, like you were just sharing with your friend that was on rheumatoid arthritis medication. So that side effect is breast cancer. I mean, that's what happens. You know, this medication is going to cause this. So then they slap that medication, you know, to solve that problem. And then
another
this
one,
And then
it's an on.
Well,
and that's really when you see people that, like you said, the average being four over 65. I mean, I think that there's, it wouldn't shock me if like, there's a lot of people maybe like you that just don't take medication. And then there's a lot of people that have multiple medications because
like six or eight.
Well, because like, well, I have to take this for blood pressure, but this medication causes this. So then I have to take this and this causes this. And it's like an ongoing kind of counter, you know,
a domino effect.
And then too, just going back to big pharma, and we do call them that for a reason, because these companies are making billions of dollars. Actually, here's another statistic from 2018, that prescription drug expenditures hit $335 billion.
That's crazy. And honestly, that makes me mad. That's what makes me mad.
Yeah.
Really, right?
Like that's what infuriates me about medicine.
And it's, so here's, so this is interesting because there's a new drug on the streets called Ozempic that was originally
for diabetes.
So it's really, it's a great drug. If you have diabetes, it really comes along and, you know, really, and diabetes can be a very dangerous disease. I mean, so whether that's juvenile diabetes that you were born with or adult onset diabetes that your father was able to prevent, but this is a disease. It's a killer. It really is. And you do have to take it seriously. So Ozempic was created for that, but then they also realized that it could be a weight loss drug. And now so many people are using it as that. And so, and maybe Kelly, you can look up what the obesity, percentage is in America, how many people are obese in America, because there again, that could be a great medication to help you if you are severely overweight. But now they're, I mean, the drug hasn't been out for very long, but now they're also seeing that, okay, if you're taking it for weight loss, then not only are you going to lose weight, but you're going to lose muscle mass. And we need our muscle mass.
That's what I've seen.
Because that's,
I think they call it like Ozempic face or something. They're saying like the people that take it, I guess basically, like, say I were to be overweight and, like, decide to take Ozempic, mm-hmm. and I'm, you know, 34, I think they're seeing a lot of, like, younger people. Like, if I took it and then lost a lot of weight, mm-hmm. that would basically result in my face being almost, like, saggy and, like, more wrinkled.
Oh, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. more wrinkled than it would.
Yes.
For a normal 34-year-old.
Yes, because you lose 50% of your muscle yeah. mass. I mean, muscle mass is what we need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so... So to offset the side effects for Ozempic, if you're taking it for weight loss, you're going to have to, I mean, you're going to have to take a look at your diet.
Yeah.
And change your diet and then really amp up your protein, because you need protein, you know, to keep your muscle mass.
And exercise.
Right.
Things that would help you
exactly,
lose to begin with.
Exactly. So.
Well, I think the other thing that's really disturbing about this Ozempic for weight loss thing is that, people have to take it for the rest of their lives.
They do.
To maintain that.
They do. And this
so
is
not. It's
not
a quick fix.
But it
gives you quick results, but yeah. though to maintain those results, you have to stay on that drug. Right. And that, can you yeah. imagine being
yes.
in your 20s or even in your 30s?
It's not a cheap drug.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
At all. It's really not. So, but anyway, what is the obesity statistic for the U.S.?
U.S. obesity prevalence was 41.9% in 2017 to March 2020.
Okay.
So
41% of our society is obese. I thought it was higher.
Prevalence increased from 30.5% to 41.9%. Let's see, a closer look. 69%.
I was going to say.
However, that's overweight or obese. So they're not, this particular statistic from Harvard is okay. not listing out, we'd have to dig into it a little bit more to get the specifics of obesity versus overweight.
Okay. Okay. But
we all know that these numbers vary amongst demographic groups, mm-hmm. right? We do know that lower income mm-hmm. Communities are at higher risk
yes.
for a lot of these things because of food deserts and things like that.
Right, which is also heartbreaking too.
Because, yeah.
And they're also not educated to choose the proper food. Right.
Yeah.
If you're in a food desert, yes. And,
yeah.
And that's a whole nother...
Well,
I
it's
mean,
like
a whole nother
all that's available is
that.
Like
yes.
McDonald's. And what is McDonald's is cheap.
Right.
You know what
even
I mean?
It's not McDonald's. Yeah. It's because that's not even that cheap anymore. But
well,
we're talking about like, you
is.
Know, the corner gas station mm-hmm. or something like
well,
this.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. It's a horrible problem that I can't believe is still such an issue in America. It's mm-hmm. one of the things that makes me really angry about how this country has managed to.
Yes.
Deal with its population, like just in general. Like, I think we have a lot of things we could be doing a lot better in America, given that we're the richest country in the
yes.
world.
I think too, if you coincide how expensive like organic produce or actually
yes.
getting good food is to big pharma
mm-hmm.
and what they're actually making.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't know. I'm just... The two coincide together, and I feel like mm-hmm. it's like, do they want you to be healthy?
No,
like,
they don't.
I think it's kind of like,
I know
they make it really pricey uh-huh. for
a reason,
mm-hmm. and only certain, you know, groups of people can afford those mm-hmm. types of food. I mean, even sometimes I go to the grocery store and mm-hmm. I'm like, you look at the produce and I'm like, mm-hmm. my God, can I afford this organic, you know, lettuce or strawberries? I'm like, this is expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
and this
yeah.
is a modern society problem, because if we just go back to the early 20th century, 19th century, when we were an agrarian
mm-hmm.
world, an agrarian society, we did not have these issues,
right?
Yeah.
Because we were all farming, we were yeah. all cultivating our own
yeah.
crops, we were
mm-hmm.
all, you know, we raised our pigs and our chickens, and so we didn't have the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
It's only after we became an industrial society, and then the automobile came into play, and we started, you know, pushing everybody out to the suburbs because we want everybody to have a car
yeah.
and buy the gas. And then,
then
how are we going to feed them? Oh, well, let's create supermarkets. And then it was
yeah.
like, because, and this is what I do love about Europe and other parts of the world, is that they still have a society where they typically go shopping for their groceries every day.
Yeah, exactly.
They have the supermarket and stuff. You know, when I was, you know, raising the boys, yeah. I'd go shopping for the whole week rather than go and pick fresh produce every day.
Yeah.
And we've removed ourselves of that, especially in the United States. Mm-hmm. But then if we start to trace, if we're going to go back to the root problem, it is we did not have these diseases 150 years ago.
Yeah,
we didn't. Yeah. I mean,
also probably weren't putting as much pesticides mm-hmm. and all of that on, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening with our food.
Yes,
today too. So
that's right. So I really do think it's on us to become educated as much as we can, to just be aware of how important our diet is mm-hmm. and how. I mean, and I think most people don't even know or understand how shitty they feel on a day-to-day basis based on
what they're eating,
on what they're, yeah.
or
what
like
they're eating.
The clue or like the reason why they just don't feel good yeah. or are tired all the time
right.
or feeling run down.
Yes. Or the people that I see, you know, struggling through the grocery store, you know, with a limp or, I mean, and I will just... as I, you know, shared with my knee replacement, that was because stress entered into my life, you know, and it impacted my joints. And so if you're feeling like, you know, your joints are not functioning the way that they should, then definitely, I mean, I'm just very, very thankful that I really did go on a health journey. Yeah. And I'm telling you, at 65, I'm going to be 66 this year. I feel amazing. I feel energetic. And, you know, to your point, Kelly, when your dad changed his diet, it's not mm-hmm. that he doesn't ever have like, you know, a piece of chocolate cake. I mean, right. I still enjoy those things. I just don't do it often.
Right.
I just don't do it. I mean,
moderation.
In
moderation.
I don't choose the potato, the whole bag of potato chips for, you know, 1,000 calories as opposed right. to, you know, a bag of kale, you know. Well,
I think like ultimately, like all of this, what you can say just as a whole mm-hmm. is that this is all about being an advocate for yourself
mm-hmm.
And
yes.
not always taking everyone's mm-hmm. opinion with a grain of salt yes. and then being an advocate mm-hmm. for yourself, finding out what mm-hmm. works, you know, mm-hmm. for you. Cause I mean, even I will say, you know, there are a time and a place for doctors.
Absolutely.
Last year I broke my foot.
Absolutely.
I can't go to a holistic doctor for my broken bone. No. You know what I mean? Like that might require surgery.
Yes.
Like obviously there are a multitude of things that do require, and it's a time and a place.
Exactly.
But I think you have to advocate for yourself. And I think you have to be willing to advocate for yourself, because if you're not, then that's when it becomes a problem, because mm-hmm. then you might end up with 8 prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. You just kind of get bulldozed into, I think even if you love your doctor
mm-hmm.
and you're really happy with your healthcare providers,
mm-hmm.
I think it is the most important thing for people to advocate for themselves by asking questions.
Ask questions.
Yes.
Like don't just let them shuttle you in and shuttle you out of the room and, mm-hmm. you know, sit there and make them earn mm-hmm. what you're paying them, because it's not cheap to go to the doctor.
If they if they're offended by you asking the questions, then maybe they're not the doctor for you, because any doctor that is a good doctor, you should be able to ask them questions without them getting annoyed.
Yes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And they even recommend to get a second opinion
mm-hmm.
on many of the diagnoses that we have. And you're and a good qualified doctor will actually tell you, go get another opinion, you know, to back up, you know, what they are sharing with you. So,
because none of this is cheap here.
No,
we don't,
it's not,
we don't live in Europe or Canada.
Well, I mean, it's the same as any person. It's the same as with your house, right? Mm-hmm. We just got our HVAC replaced, which mm-hmm. is not cheap. Mm-hmm. We probably had 5 quotes done mm-hmm. before we did that.
Mm-hmm.
You should do the same with your body.
Exactly.
Because ultimately your body is probably a little bit more important than your house.
It is.
You know, like you.
But it's all about maintenance.
You only get one.
I know, you only get one, and it's all about maintenance.
All about maintenance.
It really is. Yeah. Just like our HVACs have to be replaced. Like my knee was replaced. I mean, there are certain things that come along, but if we are overall doing all the right things, and listen, I am very well aware that at any moment, I mean, health is very, very precious. It really is. And that's why I am a big proponent to do everything that I can every day to be as healthy as I possibly can. But I also know that it can be taken away from me at a moment's notice. And so that's, that's where we all are. Because I know one thing, and that is, you know, death will come knocking on my door and everyone else's door. It's what, death and taxes. Those mm-hmm. are the two things you can't, you can't evade.
Yeah.
But I will do my best, you know, while I'm here to live the healthiest and the most vibrant life possible. And that is, mm-hmm. you know, and so far, zero prescriptions, a lot of supplements, and a lot of exercise, and doing all the good things.
Good food.
So, so anything else we want to address for over medication? I mean, there's so many more things
I do think that we can dive more into this topic in other future episodes, because there's a lot of rabbit holes to go down, I think, with this.
There are, because we didn't even really touch on our youth and the medications that they are taking, because that has skyrocketed too.
Yeah.
Especially our
teenagers. It's not just the older folks that are over-medicated, which is kind of a crazy realization.
Yes. So in the future we can, I mean, as you said, there are a lot of rabbit holes that we could go down. So we really just touched the surface of this topic, but it is an important one.
It is.
And it is startling that America is the most medicated country. We're the wealthiest and the most medicated country.
Yeah.
So probably the most depressed too. Which
I feel like the priorities are a little askew.
Okay. Well, that concludes another episode of Message from Mom, where we are busting the myth that mothers-in-law aren't necessarily monsters-in-law. Thanks, ladies.